The Church of God, the Eternal, presents Babylon Present Day, the sixth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Babylon, Past, Present, and Future, given for the sixth day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Townsend, Tennessee, October 5th, 2023.
Well, you won't be surprised to hear that we're going to continue to talk about Babylon this morning. Starting with the theme on the Feast of Trumpets, and then Atonement, and then through the beginning of the feast. That's the theme, certainly, that I've been emphasizing, and hopefully not to be too repetitive, but to give you information that's useful for you. Now, the one thing I hadn't mentioned to this group, I did in the first portion of this sermon series that I did actually in Oregon before I got here. Much of the material that I'm covering actually comes from a booklet published by Church of God the Eternal entitled Babylonianism, Historical and Prophetic. So in case you want to actually get a synoptic summary of a lot of the material that I'm expounding to you, you can get it in that booklet. And this was a booklet that was actually published by this group in 1989. Okay, so, and I bring that up for the fact that the knowledge that we had through the ministry of Mr. Raymond Cole, going back many, many years, is still fresh today and useful and meaningful for the people of God even in 2023, and it will continue to be so. And what I believe is very, very true is that the revealed truth of God never goes out of style. Now, I could spend my time giving you a sermon on prophecy out of today's newspaper headlines, speculating about what country is doing what and what prime minister or what king or what president is doing what and may indicate this, you know, in biblical prophecy. And guess what? In 6 months, it would be out of date. And you could go back 10 years from now and say, that was well-meaning, but didn't turn out that way. God willing, that's not what you hear when you hear ministers in this little group talk about prophecy. The most valuable aspects of Bible prophecy are the things that we can give you, that give you power as an individual to prepare yourself for the trials and the challenges that you will face before the return of Jesus Christ. And I guarantee you, if we keep our focus on prophecy in that way, then you can listen to those sermons 10 years from now, and they're going to be relevant. That's the orientation that you get. That's one of the things, one of the many incredible aspects that I learned at the feet of Mr. Raymond Cole. And that's what I'm trying to give you with this series on Babylon. So we've seen God's admonition to his people to come out. Come out of her, my people. So you and I want to do that, right? The question is, how? How do we do what God commands to come out of Babylon? We better first understand what Babylon is, or we don't know what to come out of, right? And then once you know what Babylon is, what's the process for coming out? How do we escape it? So these are the critical elements. If we were to come out of Babylon, how to make it a reality? So today, I'm going to talk about two particular aspects of Babylon that exist in the world right now. The title that I gave to today's message on day six of the feast is Babylon Present Day. Babylon Present Day. And I've already covered a lot, maybe, of some of the things that I want to cover today, because sometimes I can't help myself and I step on my own material. I try and hold back because I know I'm going to cover this tomorrow, so I don't say certain things today. Oh, I did it. But we're going to talk about two aspects of Babylon that exist right now today that impact you. One of them is easy to spot. It's the one that's on your radar pretty naturally. The other one, not so much. So we need to come out of Babylon. How do we do that? Come out of what? I'm not going to turn to Revelation. We're going to turn to 2 Corinthians 6 to begin. 2 Corinthians 6, verses 17 and 18. Here's another command to come out. Come, wherefore, come out from among them. What is the them? We'll hold that thought. We'll see that in a moment. Come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. Now, this isn't a prophecy specifically about Babylon, is it? But do you see the commonality to the Revelation admonition to come out of Babylon? And isn't Babylon described by God through the Apostle John as something that's very unclean, abominable? He holds it accountable as a system for everything that is wrong upon this earth, and he's going to destroy it. So I'd say that's unclean, and even if the word unclean isn't used. Come out from among them and be you separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. So once again, you see the commonality in God's thinking and orientation. If you want to have a relationship with God, if I want to have a close relationship with God, we have to put something else aside that's getting in our way. Okay? So you can't have both. And that's the same thing we found out about Babylon, which is why this applies. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Verse 18, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. You want that, I want that. Okay, so it's come out from among them. Who is this them? Well, back up. Back up to verse 14, and we're going to see the context of this and read forward, and then it's all going to make sense. 2 Corinthians 6, beginning in verse 14, be you not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. That's the them. This doesn't mean you condemn or you ridicule or think poorly of unbelievers in the world. Never forget, every human being on the face of this earth and everyone who has ever been born or will be born was created in the image of God for the purpose of being born into the God family. Don't ever, ever, ever forget that. There's a whole lot of religions out there who claim to be Christian, and they have very hateful doctrines concerning certain groups within the human family. All kind of absurd, occultic, bizarre beliefs, like interpreting that some sects or ethnic groups are not even human, like they're the spawn of Satan. That's an abomination. And that too comes out of the mind of Satan the devil. There's no such thing. So every single one of them are going to be offered in an appropriate time in God's plan a chance to qualify to be born into the God family. So if we keep that in mind, it gives us a perspective in dealing with everyone, even as Jesus Christ did in his lifetime on the earth. But you're the ones that are called right now, and you have a special obligation that they do not. They're deceived, and they can't be undeceived until God undeceives them. I know that's not proper grammar, but I do that for emphasis. So in the day that they become enlightened by the miracle of God, then God will hold them accountable, and they will start to go through a training program like you're doing right now. But for the time being, the majority of human beings on this earth do not know, cannot know, so they're doing the best they can to try and make their lives good and they're blinded, but you're not. And with understanding comes accountability. So we're the ones that are accountable. God requires something different of us. We can't just be like people in the world doing what they do. And if you've ever tried to do that, I did when I was young, tried to have it both ways. Yes, I'm in the church. I believe this is true. But I got my friends in the world and I like going. But, you know, and you can do that. You can run with a crowd. But if you're one of God's called, your conscience will bother you. And no matter how hard you try to be like everyone else, you're not like everyone else. Your calling and your enlightenment makes you different, even if you don't want to be. So young people who grow up in the church and come to maturity, the ones who ask the question, how do I know if I'm called? And I remember being in the presence of Mr. Raymond Cole years ago when different individuals would ask him that, and I can still see the smile on his face when he would say, if you're asking the question, you probably are. Because the ones who aren't, that God isn't dealing with yet, no matter if they grow up in the church, they go on into the world, they can't wait to pursue their goals, their dreams, whatever. There's no conscience whatsoever. That was mom and dad's religion, not mine. There they go. But the ones who stop and ask, I wonder if I'm called. Maybe they are actually being segregated by God in the short term rather than the long term. And I was one of those, and I didn't want to be, because I had lots of goals in the world and things I wanted to do, and the Sabbath, for one, got in the way. And I was pretty irritated about that. But my conscience would not allow me to do the things I wanted to do and violate the Sabbath, even though I had a wrong attitude about it. So there was a difference, and you can try and keep one foot in the world and one in the church, so to speak, and live a dual life or put them together, and it simply doesn't work. And that's what this is saying right here. Be you not unequally yoked together with unbelievers? For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness, and what concord hath Christ with Belial? There's only one of two. It is either Jesus Christ and everything that Jesus Christ embodies and represents, and there's everything else. There's no middle ground. What concord hath Christ with Belial, or what hath he that believeth with an infidel? And the Apostle Paul is not being disrespectful by calling someone an infidel. It's just another word for somebody who for the present time is cut off from God and therefore has no hope. A day will come when they do. But until called by God, they don't and they can't. Verse 16, and what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? It's either the temple of God and his holy, approved worship, orientation, or it's everything else, which he calls idolatry. Again, no middle ground. For ye are the temple of the living God, and as God hath said, I will dwell in them and will walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And then we're about right back where we started at verse 17. Now with that in context, wherefore come out from among them and be you separate. It's not talking about cutting yourself off physically from living. You know, Christ prayed to his Father not to take his disciples out of the world, but to protect them from the evil. So we live in this world, and God wants us to function and carry out our physical responsibilities in this world. One of my father's many old sayings, the one I think of, you can't keep the birds from flying overhead, but you don't have to let them nest in your hair. And I think that says it well. So that's our challenge, to fulfill this command right here, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers, is you don't let the bird's nest in your hair. Whatever that involves. And one of the best ways to tell and to make your individual choices day by day, to what extent are the things that you permit and that you allow, to what extent do they help you or do they harm you from being able to maintain your number one relationship with God? And if it truly distracts you from that, maybe you need to reassess it. Now, I'm not talking about family relationships, and if you've got family members who are not in the church, you still have obligations. And I guarantee you this is one that ministers in other groups, some of them are making terrible mistakes in what they believe and what they're teaching to their members. When they say that you should cut off from contact from your unconverted family members, they even say it with husbands and wives. If you have an unconverted mate, you're supposed to cut them off. Or if someone leaves the church, you have an adult child who leaves the church, or a mate, you're supposed to separate from him, cut him off. That is absolutely abominable. Because we still have obligations to physical family in or out of the church, and I know, and that causes a lot of complications. But the command, you know, the commandment number 5, respect for mother and father, does not go away based upon whether one is in or out of the church. So those may be burdens that you have to bear, and complications and difficulties in relationships because you've got people who see the world very, very differently and they don't understand what you believe. And so there may be tensions. So our spiritual growth involves mercifully dealing with, in a constructive way, those relationships. But why then would you bind yourself to someone when you don't have to? You have no obligation to them, and yet you're going to go out and intentionally, voluntarily bind yourself to someone, whether it's in a marriage, to someone that's unconverted, that doesn't share your belief in God, or in many other aspects of life, and complicate your circumstance unnecessarily, especially when it's like an anchor that's trying to pull you down to the bottom of the sea. So this passage has so much involved into it. But in general, it's the very same philosophy when we're talking about Babylon as everything that opposes God and His will, His commandments, and His purpose in offering this salvation plan to the human family. Everything that opposes that is Babylon. Every ideology, every idea, every thought that opposes the will and the perfect revelation of God is part of this philosophy of Babylon, which God hates and is going to destroy. So, I mentioned to you there are two aspects to Babylon that exist right now. One's easy to spot and one's not easy to spot. What am I talking about? Well, the first one is the evils of this present world. And this is the one that most Church of God people see. They read these prophecies concerning Babylon, come out, whatever. Oh, yeah, it's the world. The world is evil. The orientation of nations, their politicians, their man-made laws, their social structure, the entertainment, obviously their religious orientation, all of that. Okay, we see that. But let's go through it just as a reminder. And we've already made the point that Satan is the father of lies. So said God. But I've also emphasized that same lying, deceitful nature of Satan was put into you and me. And therefore, that is yours and that is mine. Even if Satan is set aside, you still got it, I still got it. Without Satan. And again, that's a concept that the other churches are not teaching because they embrace this false doctrine in the mid-1970s that came into worldwide concerning the nature of man An absolute 180-degree change took place in that doctrine in the mid-1970s, and most people are not even aware of it. And all you got to do is go back to the old correspondence course lesson. I think it's lesson 21 through 25, somewhere in there. There's your original teaching that came from God concerning human nature. Your nature, my nature, is evil as God made it, because he gave that to us intentionally to overcome. Psalm 58, verse 3. Psalm 58, verse 3. The wicked are estranged from the womb. It didn't say they were estranged from after they take a breath when they're born. It says they're estranged from the womb. How do you account for that? Well, in all the material sermons and writings of this little group and yours truly, I've showed you that, like with the example of with Esau and Jacob, twins in the womb. And Jacob was given the name by God. How did he get the name Jacob? It means supplanter, heel catcher, a tripper-upper. How would you like that for your name? And how did he get that name? It wasn't for anything he did once he was born and then was influenced by, you know, through the airwaves by Satan the devil. It was his nature in the womb, because he grabbed the heel of his older brother as he was being born. He'd never taken a breath, and yet he manifested his natural characteristics. And God gave him his name based on that. So how do you blame Satan for that? You can't. And I don't hear any of these other ministers talk about that. Maybe they could explain it away, but they can't really. It's because God gave every one of us that rebellious nature. You don't need Satan to be around in order to have it. He just amplifies it. He eggs it on in us. But it's still there. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Yep. The nature's there in the womb, and then it's manifested once we're born. Isaiah 59, verse 2. Isaiah 59, verse 2, but your iniquities have separated between you and your God. He's speaking to Israelites, his chosen children, not the people of the world. And your sins have hid his face from you that he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood, your fingers with iniquity, your lips have spoken lies. Wasn't Babylon described? We've already seen that. I won't turn back to those passages. As the epitome of deceit, all inhabitants of the world have been deceived. Deceit involves lies. We saw that Satan the devil, so said Jesus Christ, was a murderer from the beginning. He's the father of lies. But here he's talking about his own chosen people, and he says they're liars. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue hath muttered perverseness. None calleth for justice. That's a pretty broad stroke. That includes everybody, doesn't it? You and me. None calleth for justice. Now, we love the idea of justice. Peace, solidarity, love. All we need is love. So we can talk about it. The world talks about it. But you don't see the manifestation of real love, do you? Or peace. Where's peace? Isn't that one of those last day prophecies? They'll be saying peace, peace, but there is no peace. So they can talk about it. They can revere it. They can elevate it in their minds, but they never achieve it. Why? Because we're all selfish and greedy and lustful and covetous. That's why. So we love the idea of all of those altruistic principles if we can have them while we satiate our natural senses. See, we love to have our cake and eat it too. Your lips have spoken lies, your tongue hath muttered perverseness, none calls for justice. We call for it with our voices, but we want justice that always gives us what we want, whether it's truly just or not. None calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity. That's emptiness, things that have no value in the final analysis, and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. They hatch cockatrice eggs and weave the spider's web, which are things that trap human beings. We're talking about poisonous things that ultimately result in harming, not helping. He that eats of their eggs dies, and that which is crushed breaks out into a viper, which is why God said, "You shall know them by their fruits." What is the result of what people actually produce, regardless of how they talk about it or build it up? But what's the result of what they do? By their fruits you shall know them. And God's already condemned us all naturally and says, our fruits are bad. By nature, yours are, mine are. And if you understand that, and if you believe that, and you incorporate that into your own personal plan for how you want to march forward in the future, you are empowered. Because you understand who the real enemy is. And many other Church of God people right now do not. They vilify Satan. No, Satan's bad. If it weren't for Satan, I wouldn't be so bad. Which means they're not even looking at where they need to look to make the changes they need to make the change. Human beings might be innocently deceived, and many are. But the father of lies is the one that they identify most with. We hear the lies of Satan, and one of the reasons we're easily deceived by it is it matches our own thinking. It fits with the way we think and the way we want it to be, and therefore we very easily give in to that influence. So Satan capitalizes upon that natural weakness in us. And he exploits it, no doubt about it. But the root cause is the wrong orientation, the natural rebelliousness that we have. Romans 1:24, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. And there's a whole litany of things included in here, which describe the perversions that you see going on in the world and getting worse all the time. But I'm just picking this out to show you the orientation behind it all. Why do people want to violate every moral law, which should be naturally discerned? Because they talk themselves into justifying as good everything they want to do, which is evil. And why? God gave them up. He allowed them. You know, from the time he kicked Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden, is basically he allowed them to go their own way and try to make themselves happy and to pursue their goals without God. And human beings are still doing it. He gave them up to the uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts. We have drives. We have desires. We have impulses. And we want what we want. Right? But we don't want to feel that what we want is evil. So we talk ourselves into saying that what we want is also what is good. And that, my dear friends, is deception. Self-deception. But Satan helps us, because he gives us lots of justifications in the world to make us feel good about ourselves. So we can do what we want, have what we want, and still consider ourselves as good people, even to consider ourselves Christian. So you see now, you know, if you're keeping up with the news and the perversions that are being justified now that never would have been even 20 years ago. You know, this transgenderism and the whole nine yards. And as I've told you, and I've written in letters, they're heading toward justifying children being able to have sex. That's what they're doing. If they're justifying that a child, a minor, should be able to have a life-altering surgery, don't tell me then they shouldn't also be able to choose to have sexual relations with whoever they want, just like the ancients. So it's barbarism. And yes, it's a reflection of the mind of our enemy who hates human beings and wants us to be destroyed. So he wants us to cast off every restraint of the law of God. Not so that we can be fulfilled, so that we will die. He knows it. We just, the human beings, don't know it because they're deceived. So you see this more and more. And it's coming out. And so you're going to see even more of that as we get closer to the end of the age. Perversions that are justified as being right, and therefore, if you hold to any kind of moral standard that used to be accepted by the majority, now you're accused of hate. Now you're an enemy because you don't go along with this ideology. And so it's going to be a source of persecution and tribulation for those who will intend to obey and to follow the principles of God. But all of these things that Paul was inspired to describe in Romans 1, including homosexuality, it's against nature, which means people even in the world should recognize it. There's no justification. There's always been a particular part of the human family who has had a bent in that direction. So it's natural, meaning it's normal among human beings. However, it is still a perversion, and God says it's against nature. But you can't tell a human being who has a drive and a desire in a certain direction and who wants to do it that they're being evil. Oh, because now that's hateful. Stop being a hater. That's what you're told. No, we love the sinner and hate the sin. And that's the only way we can look at it. But understand, these are all things that are abominations to God. And why? Through the lust of their own heart. They want what they want, and then they want to justify it as being good. Through the lust of their own heart to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creature. That's idolatry. That's goddess worship. It's occult. Worshiping the things that you see in the earth and in the sky. The things God created, and you worship those instead of worshiping the God who made them. Worshipped and served the creature more than the creator who is blessed forever. So one day they're going to have their chance to see it. But right now they don't. So they're steeped in it. And they're getting further and further away from even God's moral law in the world, which is a confirmation we're on a rocket ride toward the end of the age. When it was prophesied to be even as it was in the days of Noah and like Sodom and Gomorrah. We're getting close. We're not there yet. You think it's bad now. You think it's bad. And I hear people say all the time, I can't see how it can get any worse. Just wait 6 months. It'll be worse. So that's the easy one to see for most in God's church. There's an aspect of Babylonianism that's in your face every day living in this world. And I know I'm preaching to the choir in that regard. And the fact that you hate that, you don't want that. You are praying for the return of Jesus Christ and his government to be established when his laws will be the law of the land. And that's what we're celebrating during this Feast of Tabernacles. Coming out of Babylon is recognizing, more so than just the evils in the world, it's recognizing that same spirit of rebellion in ourselves. I would rather be justified in pointing a finger at all the bad things going on in the world and saying, tisk, tisk. That's so bad, that's so evil, I'm glad I'm not like that. But then what would that remind you of? In the Gospels, would it remind you of the Pharisee who prayed to God, "Father, I thank you that I'm not like this publican. Look at all the good things I do compared to him." You see, there's a trap for you and me. We can do the same thing when we look at all the evils going on in the world. Yes, you need to be aware of the evils so that you can avoid them. All right? But in orientation of mind, your job is not done. That's only the beginning. And so again, I say, and this is why I quoted to you 2 Corinthians, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. If you're involved in things, attached to things in the world that's literally contradicting and refuting, making it harder for you to live God's truth, then you've got to look at that. And it may be something, it may be an unconverted mate. You can't get rid of your mate. So there's things that may not be in your power, and then you have to make the best of it. But if there are things which are not necessary, they're just things you want or like or convenient, but they're dragging you down, maybe that's a source of something worldly that you want to rethink. But I still say that's the easier part. Those are the things that are more in your face in the world, the evil world. I said there's two manifestations of Babylon today that you are confronting. The evil world is the first one. Guess what the second one is? The evils of apostasy. Now we're talking about the church. And yeah, I stepped on some of this material yesterday, I know. But we're going to go through it. Because God hates the rejection of his truth. The world has rejected all of his truth, but they never had a calling yet. You and I are different. So God has given us the miracle of being able to have a close relationship with him, which means if we fail to do it, or if we start down that road, but then we withdraw or pull away from him, now we're in big trouble. Falling away, i.e. in the Greek, apostasy, is a departure from truth. And I remember Mr. Raymond Cole emphasizing, and I never heard it in worldwide, but it's absolutely true. It's one of those things you can verify, like Mr. Armstrong said, don't believe me, believe your Bible. Apostasy doesn't mean leaving membership in a physical church. And that's the way it was always portrayed to us. Don't ever, ever, ever leave the Worldwide Church of God, or then you're in big trouble. As long as you stay a good card-carrying member, pray, pay your tithes, and stay. Then you got it made. But that falling away wasn't a prophecy concerning those who would choose to stop attending a physical service with a certain physical group. Apostasy is a departure from truth. Who knew? Well, it's in the old material. It just wasn't emphasized in that way because they never thought it would happen. But it did happen in God's true church. So the departure prophesied by God happened within, by people that we knew, and in many cases loved and respected, which is why we were so easily led down the Thule Trail, as Mr. Cole would say. We were deceived because it came from an unexpected source and it was right in our own backyard. The most effective deception of all is that which is closest to us. And yet the Bible said it all along. Jeremiah 14, verse 14. Here is what God says about his own ministers and chosen servants within the nation of Israel, and it applies then spiritually as an antitype in the New Testament church. Jeremiah 14, 14. Then the Lord said unto me, the prophets prophesy lies in my name. And what we're all of these scriptures that I'm giving you that prophesy God's true ministry actually turning to preach lies and to pull the people away from God, was all focused outward. Oh, it's not us as ministers in the worldwide Church of God. This is talking about the Catholics and the Protestants, the Sunday keepers. Because, yes, they are the product of apostasy from the first century. The first century church physically then rejected it. And what continued on in history as the visible church was an apostate body, which became the Catholics. And then out of the Catholic Church came all the harlot daughters, the Sunday-keeping Protestants. They all had their same origin, which was in the one true church in the first century. So it's absolutely true. And I understand then exactly why, because that's all God allowed us to see, or the church to see, or the ministry to see back in the 40s, 50s, 60s. They were accurate by saying that those entities are a fulfillment of the prophecy to depart from the truth, because they did. But what God did not allow them to see was how it would be manifested again in our age. They just thought it was going to be that continuation from the first century, and that the new manifestation of the Church of God that God raised up in the 20th century would never go apostate. Oh, the first century church did, but we won't. The worldwide ministry was always going to be faithful. You can trust us. We will never lead you astray. So just stay. Pray and pay and stay and behave. And you got it made. We will get you into the place of safety first and then into the kingdom of God. Just follow our lead. And if that sounds sarcastic or if I'm oversimplifying, I'm telling you, I was one who sat in the congregation, and this is what I came away with. Maybe you were different, but I bet you're not. Oh, if it were true. Wouldn't it be marvelous if that was really the test that would get us into the kingdom of God, immortal beings, kings and priests forever? Just make sure you never, ever, ever leave your membership card in the Worldwide Church of God. But what if you did that, and what really happened? Well, by the time you got to the mid-90s, a number of you know, because you went through a number of other splinter groups. You know, how long did you stay before you knew something was wrong if you were back in that time? Doctrines began to be changed, knocked over from the early 70s for the next 20 years. By the time Mr. Armstrong died in 1986 and we got up to the late 80s or the early 90s, then they started picking apart the Sabbath. They started embracing what the born-again doctrine and all kind of. And finally, a whole lot of people woke up and said, that's a bridge too far. I'm out of here, which is where all the big groups came from. And here we were. We'd already been an organized remnant body for 20 years. So they finally got fed up with doctrinal changes that came from the inside. Oh, well, Joseph de Koch, see. He didn't have the authority. What do you mean? He was pastor general. They gave Herbert Armstrong credit for having the authority. He was pastor general. And if he changed the doctrine, we had to go along with it or we were being disloyal. But a successor to Mr. Armstrong had no such credibility. So if he changed the doctrine, we're out of there. And I say, where's the consistency? Because I tell you what they were really saying is, they were treating Herbert Armstrong like the Catholic Pope. And they were doing so from the things that they said and wrote, even from 1974 on. If you don't understand this change in Pentecost, if you don't understand this change in divorce and remarriage, just know that Herbert Armstrong, God's apostle, signed off on it. And whatever he binds on earth is bound in heaven. Sounds like the Pope. Isn't that what the Catholics believe? Well, they used to believe it. I don't know if they believe it now. Their Pope is getting so liberal, there's a lot of conservatives that don't like him either. But nevertheless, if the man in charge says it, God backs it up, and then it's truth. Even if it wasn't true before, now that the man signs off, now it's truth, and that's what you have to do, or else you're in danger of for your immortal soul. Sounds like Popism. That's what they did in our church. It was the true church. And they changed to justify departure from what God put in the church for doctrine and begin to say man has the authority to change it. And we never saw it coming. We never saw it coming. Didn't think it would happen. We were always told God's church would never go astray. So you stay with us. And you got it made. Oh, but go back and now read all of these prophecies that God put in the Bible. And see it from the standpoint that it's not talking about the long apostated church, which has now come down to the modern days and the Catholics and the Protestants. It's talking about the true church today that Jesus Christ was going to raise up, and he did. And what would they do from the inside? The Eternal said unto me, the prophets prophesy lies in my name. I sent them not, neither have I commanded them, neither spake unto them. They prophesied unto you a false vision and divination, and a thing not, and the deceit of their heart. Do you think there were ministers in the Worldwide Church of God that actually started teaching out of things that came out of their mind without the inspiration of God? Oh, yes. 2 Thessalonians 2. I'm only going to pick out verses 10 through 12. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 10, with all deceivable of unrighteousness. This is a prophecy concerning the true church of God, not the false churches in the world. What are they going to do? With all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that progressively are perishing on the path that ends to death if they don't turn around. Why? Because these are God's called people. Because they receive not the love of the truth. It didn't say they didn't receive the revelation of truth. You heard Mr. Burks talk yesterday about the difference between knowing the truth and believing the truth. Same thing. That's what we're talking about. Why did they fail? Why did they get tripped up? It's not that they didn't have the revelation of God's truth. They were part of the true church, so they did. What they didn't have yet was a love for that which God revealed, which is why they were willing to give it up. Because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie. Now, wait a minute. That sounds like it's God's fault if they're deceived. So if they believed a lie and God is the one who intentionally sent the delusion, then it's not their fault, right? No, it is their fault. Basically, what God did in sending a delusion, he kicked them off the fence. He revealed his truth. He made it known through a chosen ministry. This is the truth. Now it's in our hands individually to say whether we're going to value it and cherish it like a pearl of great price and hold on to it and defend it and fight for it and never give it up, or whether it's just kind of, well, you know, okay, it's truth, but there's elements of it I don't like. Now the minister comes along and tells me, oh no, we were wrong for 40 years and, oh, well, that's better. I like that a lot better, so I'm going to embrace that. If I don't love the truth, then I'm not holding on to it. And God is saying, if you don't love it enough to fight for it, then I'm gonna teach you a lesson, and I'm gonna send you a blanket of delusion so that you'll just run whole hog after your new path. To destroy them? No. So that hopefully if they have enough of the curses that come from pursuing that path, they will finally at one day wake up and say, how did I get here? Something is desperately wrong. What went wrong? When did it go wrong? And then maybe they'll retrace their steps and say, it was all the way back here when I failed to value what God revealed at the beginning. That's his methodology. But once you have a spirit of delusion that comes from God, you can't get out of it until he removes it. And I believe there's a whole lot of well-meaning, Church of God people who are called by God and have access to the Holy Spirit who are right now under that spirit of delusion. And I can't lift it. Nobody else can lift it. It's got to be God's perfect work in their lives for their good. When he finally lifts it and allows them to see and put the pieces together with the hope that then that they will rethink. God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. Verse 12, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Because in the end, anyone who fails to value the truth will be damned. Meaning, they're simply going to go to the lake of fire and be burned up. So the whole purpose of God is to get his called children to stop disregarding his divine doctrine, to take it serious, to come to love it, and to fight for it, regardless of what any minister says. So that if then a minister comes along with the right credentials in the family of the church, but begins to teach something contradictory to what was taught from the beginning, i.e. Deuteronomy 13, we'll see it for what it is, no matter how deceptive it appears, and even if it's coming with the appearance of miracles, signs, and the guy really talks well. But he's telling me, oh, here's a new truth that we didn't know before. Jesus Christ wasn't really God from the beginning. He was created by the Father. He came into existence later. And there are ministers out there with Church of God history that are teaching that. And their members are soaking it up. Well, see, this is part of growing in grace and knowledge. We have this new knowledge that Mr. Armstrong didn't understand. No, what you have is a perversion, which is a part of a lie, which contradicts the revelation of Jesus Christ that there were two beings that existed without beginning from immortality. And according to their perfect unity, one of them became our Savior by divesting himself of his glory and being born of a human mother and qualifying and dying for us. But it's amazing. There are doctrines that I thought Church of God people would never forsake, and they're forsaking them. This is 101 stuff, brethren. But they come along and people listen to them. They're not applying Deuteronomy 13. If anyone comes along and tells you something strange that departs from what was taught from the beginning, don't believe it. So many of God's people haven't learned to do that yet. They have not learned to discern because they're not using the right standard. They've been taught that growing in grace and knowledge, being willing to destroy your original foundation and replace it with something true and foreign and call that truth. And it's absurd. So there are many who are deluded right now. We are waiting patiently for the time when God will work to begin a last day work. And it is going to happen. I mean, a massive work. And likely it's going to involve the opening of the minds of many of these so that they finally see what they haven't been able to see. And to the extent that we're a part of it, God guiding will help them. Exactly the way we're helping all those that come now. If you see it and if God has given you the blessing to put the pieces together and recognize the value of truth that comes through a chosen servant, and it's the divine revelation of God, not of man, and then you hunt for the roots of that and you find it and you come to this remnant body because we're showing respect for it and have now for almost 50 years, then we can help you. The day's going to come when a whole lot more are finally going to come to that realization and be hunting for it. In the meantime, we wait patiently and we take care of our business, which is what? You work, I work. Defend your mind. Ask for more of the Holy Spirit. Grow. Overcome. Recognize the evils in the world. Recognize the natural evil in your own mind. Be willing to crucify those thoughts and impulses that come to your natural mind. Don't just give yourself over to it. Don't justify it. And if you give in to it, at least acknowledge you gave in, rather than deceive yourself and lie to yourself that evil is good. and get on your knees and ask for God's forgiveness. Father, I messed up. I'm guilty. But I know who you are, and I believe you, and I don't want my way. I want your way. Please forgive me through the shed blood of your Son and help me to go forward. Now, if you have that orientation and you stick with it, then you are wisely using your time right now. And you're preparing for the return of Jesus Christ and the potential maybe to help many besides yourself by your example. First Timothy 4, verse 1. But all this happened in the church. Happened under our noses and we didn't see it. But that's, you know what, real growth, real advancement of knowledge is the ability now to see these pieces that we didn't see back then. And that's growth, because it doesn't undermine anything of the original doctrines, but allows us to recognize certain fulfillments of these prophecies in the rearview mirror and add that to our base of knowledge. 1 Timothy 4, verse 1, now the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter days some shall depart from the faith. How can you depart from something that you never had? Remco used to say that all the time. This is not talking about the Catholics and the Protestants who were born into false religion and they never had the truth. Oh, the root of their parent organization back 2,000 years ago had it, but they never had it. How can they depart from something they never understood? They can't. Who is this for? Members of the true church of God, that's who. In the latter time, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons. Babylon. I could insert the word Babylon. Babylon the Great, mystery religion, same thing. And God's people in his true church would give in and be seduced and give heed to it. And what do they do? What's the fruit of giving into it? Speaking lies in hypocrisy. Just like the Jews did in the days of Jesus. Oh, they had the Ten Commandments. They supposedly revered the Ten Commandments and the law of God, and they were the people of God. And the whole time, they were living lives that repudiated every principle, which is why Jesus Christ called them vipers and hypocrites. Because they were. So don't hide behind your religion or outward trappings. That won't get you anything. Better look at the substance of what you believe and then the choices that you are making. If you think you can worship God in any church of God, in any church of God splinter group, well, there's a whole lot that are making choices like that. And I get it. Well, I mean, I live so far away and there's this feast site that's closer to me and they're keeping the right days for the feast. You know, they haven't at least rejected the calendar. It's not where I would want to go, but, you know, I'm honoring God by going to a feast. Let me tell you what that's like. Well, there's not a convenient Feast of Tabernacles near me, but there is a Catholic church nearby. So I'm going to go and sit through their mass during the 7-8 days of the feast, and God will accept that as my offering to keep the feast. And there's not any one of you out there that agrees with that. I'm pretty certain of that. But these other groups who came out of our same parent group and still believe in the plan of God and the meaning of the Sabbath and the holy days and the Feast of Tabernacles, surely they're still okay. All right, you can make that choice, but the Bible is full of admonitions that God rejects the offerings of anyone who repudiates his revealed truth. You can turn to Isaiah 1. You can turn to Micah. There are people of Israel who are using his name and having sacrifices on holy days and making offerings and singing songs and hymns. And God says he hates it. He won't listen to their music. He despises what they're doing. Why? Because they have picked and chosen over his truth what they like and what they don't. They have perverted the sum total of what Christ revealed and was made available to the church. And they are doing exactly what the Jews of the first century did. And God considers them liars and hypocrites. And he says, I'm not there. Now, maybe he's in a lot of these other groups, but there's someone, according to those prophecies, that God says, I am not there, and I will not receive their offerings. So what you and I better be concerned about is, where are those in particular groups? Because I don't want to think I'm going to the feast and I'm going to some place that is no better than a Catholic mass in the eyes of God. So I don't know, maybe he accepts the Feast of Tabernacles from a lot of these groups, but just not some who are really bad. But you need to be able to make a choice. Because someone is going through the motions and looks just like us, and yet he says, I hate what they're doing, and I will not accept their offerings. That's not a feast site. How will you know the difference? What rule will you use? The only rule I know is the original teaching on the fundamental doctrines. From our standpoint, if you do not keep Pentecost as an example on the one and only day that God hallowed as the day that pictures his work with the first fruits, you really think somebody who's keeping a Sunday Pentecost is on God's okay list? Or is teaching that adultery isn't adultery? That God doesn't really bind the marriages of the unconverted? Or, you know, if your marriage doesn't work out, yes, it's a sin, but like every sin, you just ask for forgiveness and put it under the shed blood of Jesus Christ and go out and get you a new mate. And if that doesn't work, you ask forgiveness for that and go get you another one. And if that one doesn't work, you ask for forgiveness and go and get you another one. And that's what all these other groups, for the most part, believe. So you tell me, really, their feast sites are okay with God? Even though there are many of them sitting there who are committing adultery according to the true law of God. Really? So this is the nearest feast site to me, so I'm going to go there. Okay. I just warn you strongly, be very, very careful about how you make that decision. Are you sure you're not deceived? The apostasy was a rejection of divine truth that happened from the inside out. The ministers of God changed the truth of God and began to teach a lie. And I don't know, for 40 years, Mr. Armstrong taught one thing on divorce and remarriage, and then in 1974, they totally changed it, and the same thing with Pentecost. And I'll add to that the teaching on the nature of man, tithing, and a whole lot of others. So you tell me, how much of the truth does a group still have to have before God will accept your offerings to go to their feast site? So I'll make a lot of people mad, I know, but I've been doing that for 20-something years. I still cite this one, you know, when I think it was right at the beginning of a feast, you know. And I said something provocative. You know, if you don't think God is here and whatever, you know, you should pick up and leave. And a guy literally got up and walked out the door. I'm not, as Raymond Cole said, we do not put a fence around ourselves. But we do put a fence around the revealed truth of God. I'm not saying that we're the only fellowship where you can go and have God accept your offerings. If there's another organized group out there who is keeping all those original truths, including marriage, Pentecost, respecting the divine revelation of Christ through a chosen servant, and just because we don't know about them doesn't mean they're not there and that they're not legitimate. But I guarantee you that if there's another organized group doing it, we just simply don't know about it. So if you come to me and ask where it's appropriate to go to the feast, I only know the ones we're sponsoring. It's not because we're putting a fence around ourselves, but if it's any group, take my minister hat off, and I'm telling you from the standpoint of a called, baptized member of the Church of God, which I was for 16 years before I ever was in the ministry. And you're asking me, according to my conscience, where I can confidently go to the feast and feel that God will receive my sacrifice. I would never do it in a group that's keeping a Sunday Pentecost or Sivan 6, and never to a group where the ministry is saying, justifying divorce and remarriage, and says God approves it. I couldn't do it. But see, those are personal choices. But someone's deceived. A lot of sincere Church of God members have been deceived. And they were deceived by their own ministers. So said God. Even as Babylon is the haven of greedy merchants, so too is the apostate church. And I've gone way over my time already. Remember what we read in Revelation 18, verse 3? All nations have drunk up the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. So in the world, a big element of Babylon is about money. It's commerce. It's trading. It's getting wealth physically off the back of the system. Well, Babylon in the church is the same thing. 2 Peter 2, verse 1. 2 Peter 2, verse 1, there were false prophets also among the people. That means in your midst, in the church of God, even as there shall be false teachers among you who privately shall bring in damnable heresies, wrong doctrines that defy what Christ revealed, even denying the Lord that bought them and bring upon themselves swift destruction, and many shall follow their pernicious ways. Oh, just a few would be deceived and take themselves out of the church. No, many. Sadly, up to now, the majority of members of God's true church bought into it. By reason. Why? By reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of, when they began to say, poor Mr. Armstrong, he didn't know how to count Pentecost. He was trying to count in English, but the Bible is written in Hebrew. So we're smarter. And we consulted with rabbis in Jerusalem who showed us how to count inclusively. Yeah, the way of truth was evil spoken of. It was denigrated. It was trampled upon in the name of human wisdom. And through covetousness. What is that? Covetousness is an inordinate desire for something which is not lawful. Through covetousness shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you. And it's the Greek word that means a peddler's trade. Ministers in the true church of God would be treating you like a money well. They're after your substance. They're not first and foremost trying to teach you the truth and willing to stake their lives upon defending the truth. They're in it for a business because they want your tithes and your offerings. They shall with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. There's a price to be paid one day for any of them who do not repent. I guarantee you, I have seen many legitimately ordained ministers that link back to the Worldwide Church of God, who ended up making choices of where they fellowship, which group would accept them and pay them a salary. And they were willing to modify what they taught in order to fit the party line of that group to ensure their income. Or if they were the head of the group, they're willing to modify and change the doctrine to make it easier for people to be a member. Because you got to keep that money coming in. That's why I've said this group is going to stay small for no other reason than our teaching on divorce and remarriage. Now, we're not enforcing it. You know, your state of marriage before God is your state, you know, and I don't have to be in that. But you ask me, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you, you better be very thoughtful about deciding whether you are legitimately married or not married, or committing adultery, or not committing adultery, because God's going to hold you accountable. So my responsibility is to tell you the truth, and then it's your responsibility to act or not to act. So this is speaking of ministers who make a business of religion. They see you as merchandise to buy and to sell for their personal gain, and I've seen it over decades. We've had ministers, Mr. Cole did, I have even since Mr. Cole died, who basically wanted to join our group. And then when they found out that I wouldn't put them on the payroll, they were out of there. The rare exception, and we've had some who have been incredible beneficial servants to the church who demonstrated they have a love for God's truth. And thank God for them. But many, not so much. My dear friends, to come out of Babylon, we have to reject any fellowship or entanglement that does not hold fast to the original revealed faith. Final text, 2 John, verse 9. 2 John, verse 9, whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. Pretty straightforward the way God views it. Oh, but that doesn't sound loving. Why can't we just love each other? You believe in the Sabbath and the holy days, and I believe in the Sabbath and the holy days, and even though we don't keep exactly the same days or have exactly the same doctrine, but we're all God's people, so let's just get along. I call that the Rod, you know, the, what was his name? The Rodney King philosophy. Can't we all just get along? So there are ones out there legitimately want, you know, stop fighting about the difference in your doctrine. We all used to be part of the same church back in the old days. Why can't we be back together and have hundreds and thousands of people at Feast of Tabernacles like in the old days? Can't we all just get along? Let's not let our difference in doctrine get in the way of our unity. That too is a lie. You cannot have godly unity apart from the doctrine. The doctrine is the glue, the foundation upon which we build unity, because we all believe in that revelation. If we don't agree on the doctrine, how can we be unified? Because now we're back to 2 Corinthians, unequally yoked with unbelievers. Well, maybe I'm the unbeliever, and maybe someone else out there is the believer, but they can't have real unity with me even if I'm the one that's wrong on the doctrine. And they're the ones that's right. We can't have unity as long as we're not agreed on the doctrine. So many groups are trying to have oneness in the church without the doctrine, and it'll never work. What I say is you want to have the kind of unity and the oneness in the large crowds that we had at the Feast of Tabernacles back in the early days. Let's keep the doctrines that the church all kept together back then. What were the doctrines in the 50s and the 60s? How about that for an idea? You want that kind of unity? Let's go back to those teachings. Because those were the ones that God was blessing when the church was growing 30% every year on average. Verse 10, if there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine. Sounds to me like doctrine can't be ignored. Receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed, for he that bids him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds. I'm not saying to be unkind to anybody. But if you're going to fellowship with them, if you're going to make your offerings before God, and you're in a fellowship that has embraced false doctrine, do you really think God's going to be there? Are you sure you have come out of Babylon? Think about all of these traps within church consideration, choices of fellowship, doctrine, the history of the teachings, and where is God? Are you really out of Babylon? Are you coming out of Babylon? It's one thing to point your finger at the evil world and go tisk, tisk. It's another thing to recognize those decisions that affect us in our world right now, you and me. If you take these things seriously, then you can come out of Babylon. You will come out of Babylon, and you will be among those that God gives special consideration in the days to come.
Thank you.
the Church of God, the Eternal, has just presented Babylon Present Day, the sixth message in a series by Mr. John Brisby, entitled Babylon Past, Present, and Future, given for the sixth day of the Feast of Tabernacles, in Townsend, Tennessee, October 5th, 2023.